Hi, I'm Sam Fesich from the EduMagic Podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Elizabeth B. Splane. That's right, Beth is back, and today she's talking about her children's book, Tyrone the Tenor Mouse, the Singing Mouse of the Opera House. Love this focus. Join us as we learn a little bit about opera and Tyrone and his friends. What a cool story. It's awesome, and you're going to love it. By the way, before you go, it'd be so cool if you took a minute to help me out with the podcast, and there's a couple ways you could do this. One is you could tell a friend, you know, about Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and share the links with them. How about that? Another way would be to go to my website and leave a review and subscribe. What do you think? And finally, what about this? You could click on the link on my website homepage to buy me a coffee, and this is the way you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. Thanks so much for helping me out. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
So, Tyrone popped in my head, as did my very first character, years ago, for my very first book. Tyrone popped in my head, this little gray, cute mouse popped in my head. And I kept hearing in my head, that was the cutest little mouse who lived in the basement of an opera house. He had great dreams of one day being the finest tenor who ever did sing.
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up the tin and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Elizabeth B. Splane is a retired opera singer who enjoys reading and writing World War II stories that focus on tenacity, hope, and the indomitable human spirit. Prior to writing, Elizabeth earned an A.B. in psychology from Duke University and an M.H.A. from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She spent 11 years working in healthcare before switching careers to become a professional opera singer and voice teacher. When not writing, Elizabeth teaches classical voice in Rhode Island, where she lives with her husband, sons, and dogs. Previously on the show, we've talked about two of her novels, one called Swan Song and the other Steel Butterflies, which you'll find links in the show notes when we talk about that a little bit later. Our focus today is Beth's book for children. It's called Tyrone the Tenor Mouse, the Singing Mouse of the Opera House. Very cool. Beth, thanks so much for joining me again, and looking forward to catching up, and say hi to everyone.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on again, Steve. I really appreciate the support and everyone who's listening today.
Well, it's great to have you on the show again. And let's pick up with this before we talk about your book. I mean, you're a retired opera singer. For someone who has never experienced attending an opera performance, how would you explain the style of music to that person?
This is such a loaded question because so many people, when they think of opera, they think of snooty, they think of rich, they think of I don't understand a word they're saying and all of that. And in the past, that is true. And it comes down to the history of opera, which I am certainly not an expert in. But the first actual opera was performed in 1607 in Italy. And it has changed and morphed and grown. Originally, it was in the court of the king. That's where it was performed to impress dignitaries and visitors. So the history of it does, the pomp and circumstance is very, very real. And when opera first came to the United States in the 19th century, it was not well received. And because people couldn't understand it, even though words were printed in the bulletin, et cetera, et cetera. So this is how I explain opera. So opera, the music of opera is primary. When opera first started, the voice was primary. Operas were written with singers in mind for singers. And singers would come up with different pitches and notes and runs that were then later written into the score. But opera is now, in the Western part of the world, primarily about the music and the composer and what the emotion that the music is trying to evoke. And that's why when anyone who goes to an opera, most people, even though that you don't understand what they're saying, you can still just listen to the music and get a sense of what's trying to be translated to you. Whereas musical theater, is all about the words. It's about the story. Opera is told through recitative and aria, which is telling the story and the emotion with it. And musical theater, I can be just talking to you and I can say, hey, Steve, I had a really bad day and I don't know what to do because I'm really sad. So it's just a whole different medium. Both are fun and great, but the operatic voice is one that not everybody has. But if you're trained classically, you can sing almost anything. Do you want to hear an opera singer sing rock? Absolutely not. But do you want to hear a rock singer sing opera? Absolutely not. So we can be trained in different media and enjoy singing in all of them, even if we don't necessarily record in that. So to answer your question bluntly, opera to me is primarily about emotion and the emotion traveling on the music versus musical theater, which is about the story and kind of putting everything out there. I hope that is somewhat helpful.
Oh, it's very helpful. Thanks. That's awesome. And I don't know many names of different operas, but Carmen always stands out as one that I remember the most. And I appreciate you explaining that. Thank you. So where'd your interest in opera come from?
Well, this is kind of what I mean about when I went into I knew I wanted to sing since I was little. And no music school back then, you didn't teach kids in the bel canto style of singing, which is pretty singing, right? In the Italian style of classical voice. I didn't want to sing opera. I wanted to be on Broadway. So I went into my very first voice lesson when I was 12. I finally was able to study with this woman from the Academy of Music in Philadelphia. And I had my Broadway book and I slapped it down on the piano. I was 12. And she said, literally, she wore a surgical mask, which is ironic because now we're all wearing surgical masks, or we did, but because she didn't want to get sick, a lot of opera singers used to do that, probably still do. And she said, what is that? And I said, oh, it's my Broadway book. I want to be Annie, the sun will come out, and burst into song at 12 years old. And she put her hand on her chest and she drew herself up to her very tall height and said, we do not sing Broadway in my studio. And I said, we don't. And she said, no. And I said, what do we sing? And she said, we sing opera. And I imitated her. I put my hand on my chest and I said, what is opera? Like that. And my mother put her head down because she was so embarrassed. And my teacher started laughing. And she said, let me show you. And she had me singing in French that day before I ever studied the language. She started me off with one of the hardest languages to sing in for a whole bunch of reasons. And I ended up studying French for 10 years because I loved it so much. Obviously, other languages too. But she was the one. And at the end of my first lesson, she said, she's going to be a mezzo soprano. She can really do this, you know, if she wants to, and she has to work hard, blah, blah, blah. And so I did that for a couple of years, and it's just kind of where my voice fit. Looking back, it's where my voice fit. Even now, when I sing Broadway stuff, and it's super fun, but my soul and how my voice feels most comfortable is in an operatic sound. And when I first started teaching, I looked back and I thought, how did she know that? And now that I've been teaching for 20 years, someone walks through my door in the first 5 minutes, I'm thinking, okay, this person could do it. Now I get it. And it's not a matter of how hard you work, but it's just a type of voice. And all voices can be cultivated. People come in with an idea in their head of what they want to be and how they want to sound. But the reality is you have to find your own sound, just like we all have to kind of find our way in the world. And kids have to find their way through social situations, which is part of what Tyrone is about.
Very cool. Thank you. Thanks for explaining that. And that's what an interesting experience at 12.
Yes, it was. I mean, I had no idea what I was in for. I literally had no idea about opera. There was no music in my family. I didn't have a piano for years. My dad would play some gospel, The Mighty Clouds of Joy. I still love them. And he would play some bluegrass, but really there was no music. They didn't know where I came from. Like, they really didn't know what to do with me because I just came out singing and that was it. So.
Nice, nice. All right. So do you have a favorite opera or part to sing in an opera performance? Something that you like?
Well, it's funny because I've played Carmen, and that's a super fun role to play. I played opposite a guy who was handpicked by Placido Domingo from his restaurant in Mexico. He was handpicked to come and play this role.
Wow.
So that was an experience. And, but my favorite roles, you know, mezzo sopranos, which is what I am, the voice type, is we usually play maids, like second bananas to the soprano, or boys. We play pants roles like Cherubino and The Marriage of Figaro, or we play whores. I mean, you know, every once in a while we get lucky. We can play Cinderella if you have a certain type of mezzo soprano voice, but in general, we're whores. So Carmen was a prostitute. Delilah, basically, she sold her soul. She was a whore. So these are fabulous roles. I love different, I tend to go for arias that I like, the songs in operas versus the opera itself. So there's one called The Medium. And it's about a woman who pretends to talk to dead people. And it is so incredibly dark and twisted and awful. And I love every minute of it. It's like writing a dark character in a book. You get to step inside their shoes, but that's not who I am. But it's so fun to do that on stage. So I'd say The Medium was a great show to be in. Carmen is Carmen, and Delilah is Delilah. I mean, it's hard to go wrong with those. Other characters I've played have been maids, or, you know, things like that. So, or second bananas. And that's fun too. It's fun to not be under the huge pressure of being the lead. And just to be clear, when I was a lead, they were in relatively small opera companies. The biggest opera company I sang with was Harrisburg Opera in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Grand Rapids Opera in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My last audition was for Detroit. And that's a whole nother conversation that we can have another time over a drink. It was very funny. It ended interestingly. And that's how I'll leave that.
Nice, nice. So stay tuned. Maybe down the road we'll get her to answer that question. I like that.
It's actually a big story that I tell my students, because it's a story about tenacity and perseverance. But go ahead.
Gotcha. Okay, so cool. So we'll leave you on that thought there. So thanks for sharing, Beth. And all right, so previously we've talked about a couple of your novels. Let's get into your writing now. We talked about Swan Song and Steel Butterflies, and these are stories that connect with war and secrets and trust and more than that. And why'd you decide to write a children's book?
So Tyrone popped in my head, as did my very first character years ago for my very first book. Tyrone popped in my head, this little gray, cute mouse popped in my head. And I kept hearing in my head, that was the cutest little mouse who lived in the basement of an opera house. He had great dreams of one day being the finest tenor whoever did sing. And it just, I was like, okay, I have to write this. So I sat down, and this was years ago, 7 years ago. And I wrote the poem, and it was several pages long, you know, and the eventual book didn't even include the entire thing, because it would have been too long. But it just kind of spilled out of me, this cute little mouse. How ridiculous is it that a mouse, would want to sing opera? It's unthinkable. It's ridiculous. And it's improbable and wonderful. And that's why I wrote it.
Love it. Love it. That's really cool. It's really cool that these thoughts were coming, and it's like, okay, we're going to make this happen. So I love the fact that you made it happen, because that's what, you know, a lot of people have ideas for something to write about, but it never makes it more than just the idea. Now you have this completed book about Tyrone, which is awesome.
Well, it's interesting, because I don't know that it would have come to fruition without Trish Lewis at Van Velzer Press, because Van Velzer is the was the publisher of Steel Butterflies, my last novel. And I was thinking about, I thought, you know, I really would like to do I'd like to get a children's book out there. So without having a publishing agreement with anyone, I went on to Upwork.com to search for an illustrator. And I know we're going to talk about that, but and I ended up getting hooked up with an illustrator. So I actually paid out of pocket for the illustrations on my own. And knowing that I did not want to self-publish a children's book. Children's books are incredibly hard to market. So once I had a couple of the drawings, I went to my publisher and I said, hey, how do you feel about publishing a children's book? And she said, I don't. And I said, okay, because here's the thing. And I explained it to her. She said, well, let me just read the manuscript, so the lyrics. So I sent her the poem, and I said, and here are some of the drawings that an artist I've hooked up with is creating. And she, within like 12 minutes, wrote back and said, we're doing this. So it truly was a labor of love, because she did the layout. Trish Lewis, you know, shout out to her. She's amazing at Van Velzer Press. So that's why this book happened.
Very cool. That's awesome to know too, because that's it went from idea and thought to making it happen, thanks to being able to get the drawings and put that together with your idea. So I love it. That's awesome. All right. So, you know, the main focus of your book is Tyrone the Tenor Mouse. So let's talk music for just a second. What's a tenor?
Good question. So often choral music, four-part harmony, is broken up into soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. So tenor is traditionally known as the highest, well, not the highest, almost the highest male part. There's something called a countertenor that sings similar ranges to what I sing as a mezzo-soprano. But a tenor is traditionally the highest male part. And so you think of all of the major operatic tenors, Jose Carrera, all the ones who were, I mean, Placido Domingo, Pavarotti, they were all tenors. The money note hitting that high C that everyone loves so much. Josh Groban is a baritone, which is the next voice type down. But he's a baritone, I call him a baritone with tenor tendencies, because he clearly has those high notes ready to go. So I actually think he's probably a tenor baritone, not a baritone tenor. But if he wants to contact me, we can have that conversation. So anyway, that's the tenor. That's the tenor area.
Appreciate you explaining that. That's awesome. Yeah. I play trumpet, been around for a while and all that. And I've always, and I've had people try to see if I could sing, but
we may have to test that, Mr. Steve.
there's a reason why I stuck with the trumpet. All right, but the point is that I appreciate you explaining that. So, because as we get into this story here, that has a lot to do with. I mean, because that's a big part for this little mouse to have.
Yes, it is. It sure is. You're right.
I love it. So, all right. So tell us a little about Tyrone. Who is Tyrone? Where does he come from? And tell us all about that. How does he end that opera house?
So Tyrone lives in the basement of an opera house with all of his mice friends, all of whom, and he has a secret dream. He wants to be a tenor. He wants to be the lead on stage. He wants to be the hero. So he secretly rehearses with Roland L'Amour, who is the lead tenor in the opera house. His name is Roland L'Amour. And so he secretly watches him from the wings every night. And he sings his part, and he falls asleep singing every night. And he dries out his throat. He sings so much, and he wakes up and he does it again, because he just loves the opera so much. And he so desperately wants to be in the limelight. His friends, his mouse friends, think he's out of his mind, that there's no way he would ever get on stage. And then there are other people who live, other animals who live in the house. Stella is the cat of the diva, and Stella is white and has a beautiful emerald collar, and she's very prim and proper. And then there's Oscar the mangy mutt. And so Oscar is a mutt who wears a fedora. And his owner found him one night in the snow after a show and didn't have the heart to let him go. So Oscar's owner is Klaus. He is the manager of the opera house. And Klaus speaks like this all the time. Ah, you want to be on stage? Ah, Oscar, stop sniffing the cat. Stuff like that. And then the owner of Stella is Miss Gloria Snow, who's the diva. And she talks like this. And she says, well, I never, if he sings here on stage, I shall never sing here again. And so those are all of the players in the opera house in Ty's world.
That is awesome. And I hope the cartoon will come out eventually too, because it needs to go with this, where you voice the characters. That would be awesome.
It's really fun to, when I do readings for kids, because I love to stand up and do it, because when I'm Ty, I hunker down. Nice. And I talk like this. Can I have a turn? And then, you know, class, we each have their own voices. And to watch the kids' eyes light up and their eyebrows shoot up and they tend to imitate the facial, you know, expressions. It's just, it's a joy. It's such a joy. I love going to bookstores and libraries and doing it. It really is.
That's fun. So cool. So cool. Yeah. I love it. So why will the story resonate with children? Why? What do you think makes them want to talk and read more about Tyrone and his friends?
Well, it's funny because when Tyrone was created, little did I know that mice are very lovable to children. To me, he just was a mouse. But apparently mice are in. So that's kind of cool, which I didn't know.
Very much so.
But also because, you know, kids are little people in a big world with big people. And I think they can identify with a little mouse who's in a big world with dogs and cats and people who is always being told, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't try that. And Ty says, why shouldn't I do that? If I'm not hurting anyone and I'm getting better and I'm working really hard, what's wrong with that? And so I think kids can identify with that and having a dream. At the end of the book, spoiler alert, he gets on stage, but at the end of the book, it says, Ty's dream came true. Yours can too, if you work really hard and keep faith in your heart. To me, honestly, this world is such a mess right now. And it just seems like the tensions are ratcheting up, that this is a safe place where kids can get wrapped in the warmth of not just a story, but the love of friends, faith in oneself, music, not to be ever underestimated, the power of music to change people's lives, and to bring them hope in instances where there seems like there's no hope. I remember early on in the Ukrainian war, there was a YouTube video, I think, of a little girl in Ukraine singing in a bomb shelter, and that went majorly viral. Why? It's a child and she's singing, and it's about hope and faith, right? And perseverance. And that's, we should all have a little of that in our lives, much less kids who I'm sure feel a lot of pressure. So just to take a beat, you know, 7 minutes to read this book, and just to be in a cocoon of warmth, love, music, and faith, you know, in whatever you believe in. For the parents out there and the grandparents, there are operatic terms in the book. And so when I first wrote the book, one of the things that Trish at Van Velzer said, she said, you know, make sure you're cognizant of the fact that these are going to be 5-year-olds, you know. And so I went back through and I changed some words. And then I did a glossary at the end of the book and put in real life terms what each of the words that stand out that someone may not know. So there's a glossary there. So kids who were a little older, if you read this book to your newborn, great. But as they grow up, if it becomes a favorite, they're going to learn something along the way, as will the adults, quite frankly, who perhaps aren't familiar with opera.
Love it. Love it. That's awesome. You know, one of the things that I believe is part of Tyrone's life are his friends. Can you talk a little bit about what role his friends play?
Yeah. Oscar the mangy mutt is always his friend and always supportive of Ty's dreams. Stella is a cat. So she's always taking care of Miss Gloria Snow, her charge, hissing throughout the day with anyone who dare gets in the diva's way. But as Ty is offered a chance to get on stage and Gloria Snow turns up her nose at the idea, really dismisses him, Stella says to her, oh, no, 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 you don't understand. He's better than you. You should want to sing with him. So Stella has this change of heart where, you know, cat versus mouse, all of a sudden the cat is in favor of the mouse being on stage. And as Miss Gloria Snow says, well, I never, like that, Ty is hugging Stella the cat. So it's a story of understanding who's important in your life, and that just because someone is nasty in the beginning doesn't mean you should give up on them, because perhaps it's their issue, not yours, and that they'll come around.
Love it. Love it. That is awesome. All right. So earlier you alluded to the conversation about an illustrator. Your Your book was illustrated by Maria Stepanova. What was it like to work with an illustrator, and how'd you find her?
So as I mentioned earlier, I went to Upwork.com. That was a fluke how I found out about that. But Upwork.com is a fabulous site where artists of all genres offer their services. And so you can describe what you'd like to be done, and then artists will bid on it. And so I reviewed a bunch of illustrators' works, and Maria's stood out as really what I wanted my characters to look like. They were bright. They were modern. The original vision I had of Tyrone was actually different than what Maria sent me initially. And when I first saw it, I literally went, no. Nope. And then I put it away and I brought it out again 2 days later. And I looked at it again and I thought, yeah, this is Tyrone. So that was an interesting journey for me too. It was much more modern, much more vibrant than I had anticipated. But so I sent out my, request, and Maria responded immediately, which was great. And I told her my budget, which was very, very low. And she said, oh, that's very low. And I said, I understand if you don't want to do it, I understand. And she said, will you send me the manuscript? So I sent it to her, the whole thing, because that's a trust thing. She could have taken that, right. But I trusted and I sent it. And she wrote back and she said, I absolutely want to be on this project, which was really touching to me. Like, she believed in the project. Cool. So even though we never spoke on the phone, we can only communicate through Upwork, and she is in Ukraine. So we started the project when the war was already raging, and I wouldn't hear from her for up to 2 weeks. And I was very careful not to ask about the war. I made allusion to it in one email, and she was very cagey. So I decided, this one, it's not my business. And two, as long as she's safe. And she said, I can only check emails so often. So I would go 2 to 3 weeks without hearing from her. So it took a long time to go back and forth with the illustrations. But finally we got it done, and I sent her a copy of the book. I said, are you going to be able to receive this? Are you able to receive any mail? And she said, there's one place where we can receive mail. I mean, it's insane what's happening. And I have not heard from her since. And I'm not going to lie, I was a little worried. I sent another note saying, just making sure you received the book, and she never responded. So I haven't checked Upwork because I'm scared. Honestly, I don't want to.
Understand.
But she was amazing to work with. She went way, I contracted with her for 16 drawings, and I think I ended up with like 30. Wow. Just because we had to rework them to make them go across pages as a full spread. She was remarkable, truly remarkable, not to mention being in the middle of a war. I can't imagine.
That's something else, and I do hope that she is well. So,
Me too.
Awesome. They're awesome drawings, and it's really cool she's made Ty come alive. So
she did. She absolutely did. And my kids got me for Christmas a, I think, 16-inch stuffed Ty.
Nice.
Which went to the wrong address, so we never saw it. But the thought was there. I was all excited to get it. But somewhere in the world, there's a Tyrone the Tenor Mouse floating around. And hopefully whoever has it is enjoying it very much. Someday.
It will either make its way back or time
exactly.
For
or not.
The second try.
But you know what? If it goes to a kid, if a kid opens it and loves it, and then one day, who knows? Dad might be online and be like, hey, wow, there's a book that looks like your stuffed animal. That would be really awesome. So you never know.
That would be awesome. I like that. I like that a lot. That's funny. Well, hopefully Tyrone finds his way back, or there's a second chapter to that.
I was going to say, that's a great story too. Yeah.
Yes, nice. It is. The adventures.
You can be my co-author in that.
There we go. Thanks. Good stuff. Beth, we're getting close to finishing up here, and, I'm going to ask this question because of what you just said. You got any thoughts about it? Further adventures of?
I would love to do that. I would love to do that, given the time and energy that it takes to do a children's book. I don't know, but I would love to do that. If Tyrone took off, I would absolutely 100% do an entire series. I actually have, My dogs are Huckleberry and Booker. And so I have some Huckleberry Booker adventures, and they have very specific voices. And nice. I've recorded actually some of their exploits. And that is also something I've thought about. And that would be great to make that happen too. It just takes getting hooked on to, you know, a publisher who's going to go all out on this. So we'll see.
Good luck with that. That's awesome. That'd be cool.
Thank you.
Great names for this.
Huckleberry and Booker.
Yes. Love that. Love that.
Yeah. Huckleberry is very, he's very high strung and prim and proper. So he says, well, I'm a good dog. I'm a good dog. Booker is not a good dog. He's a terrible dog, but mummy loves him anyway. And nice. Booker's like, I don't know why you're so upset. It's just a bone. I don't know why you have to go run into mom every time. So they're very, very different.
Nice. It's kind of fun. I like that. Good luck on that. That would be an awesome series right there. That'd be good stuff. Beth, if someone wanted to learn more, get a copy of your book or reach out to you, where would you send them?
Well, website is first, ElizabethSplainAuthor.com. Like, you got some splaining to do, Lucy. So ElizabethSplainAuthor.com is a great way to reach me. You can get my books on Amazon, or you can go into any local bookshop in order to support the local bookstores and ask them to order any of my books once you identify them on my website. And if whoever does that, first of all, thank you. And second of all, if you'd be kind enough to leave reviews on Amazon and or Goodreads, that is a beautiful way to tell an author that you care about their work. So, oh, and I just found out recently, Santa Fe Opera, which is a major opera company in the United States, has ordered the special Opera House edition of Tyrone the Tenor Mouse for their opera house. Nice. So books were printed with their logo inside specifically, and they will be sold in their Opera House store. So if you happen to be in Santa Fe, run to the Santa Fe Opera House.
Very nice.
And other opera houses are considering purchasing them for their stores and or using them in opera outreach for kids, including Houston Opera, Austin, Seattle, and Atlanta. So it's kind of cool that Tyrone is making the rounds throughout the United States. So
that's very cool. Congrats on that. That's awesome. What a nice niche that you found there. Love that.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it is a niche. Kids and music go together like peas and carrots, as far as I'm concerned. So it's easy and it's fun and a joy all the time.
Very cool. Awesome. Good stuff. And I wish you the best with that. And I one last question I want to ask you, which actually just has to do with writing, that I wanted to make sure that I asked you this question before we go. If you had a chance to talk with an audience of new writers, what advice would you give them about starting and finishing a book?
It's such a burden, isn't it, to have an idea and not know what to do with it?
Yes.
I hear this, as you can imagine, as I'm sure you do when you talk to other writers, all the time. People say, oh, my daughter's writing a book. Oh, my son's been writing a book for 7 years. So my thing is to get your thoughts down on paper. We all have a tendency to be perfectionists. And so some people are so self-critical as they're writing that it literally stops them in their tracks. But you are the one to decide if your writing is good. Ultimately, it's your responsibility and write. But give yourself a break in the beginning and just write. Write the story. Don't worry about punctuation. Don't worry about quotation marks and dialogue. And if you're using the ellipsis right, just write. And then put it away for a little while. Get away from it. Distance yourself. And then come back to it and reread it. Have some trusted friends read it. And listen to them. Another issue that a lot of people have is that they don't want people to critique their work. You will not get better if you do not listen to the critiques. Doesn't mean you have to change everything. My rule of thumb is, in my beta reader group, when I finish a novel and I send it out to my beta readers, if two people allude to the same thing then I take a look at it. But if someone says, well, I thought that was a terrible decision she made and she never would have made that decision. And one out of six people says that, I ask why and I listen and I take notes and I always thank them. And I never tell them whether I'm accepting their criticism as in terms of changing the book or not. You just say, thank you so much. I appreciate your perspective. Thank you so much. So I would say just write, try to leave the black raven that's pecking at you all the time to be better and get better and be the best and blah, blah, blah. Try to cage that bird for a minute and just give yourself a break and just write. And join a writing group if you can. I am not a member of one, but I hear that they are wonderful. I have lots of writing friends who are in them and who have gotten good starts that way. Talk to other writers. Join the Writers Guild. Tons of great advice on the Writers Guild. It's not that expensive. I can't even remember. It was like $35 for the year or something like that.
Nice.
So, yeah. So there are lots of opportunities if you open yourself up. And that, quite frankly, is the hardest part. The hardest part is to let go of your baby and say, here's what I created. Do you love me? That's the hardest part.
Most definitely, I love that, and I think that creates more difficulties with anybody, with everybody.
It
can be thought.
The difference between a book and a kid, lots of differences. But with a kid, the kid is trying to get away from you eventually, right? Like, I yes. get it, leave me alone. I'm old enough, I can do it myself. The book is like, don't let me go into the world. They may not love me. So it's very different, but it's kind of the same feeling of like, oh, I don't get it.
I love that. That's awesome. Beth, it's been great catching up with you. Thanks so much for sharing your children's book, Tyrone the Tenor Mouse, the Singing Mouse of the Opera House. Love the focus. Yay for Tyrone, and wishing you the best in all you do.
Thank you, my friend, as always, till we meet again.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmoletto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.